to thank our readers, and let's give a warm Tulare County welcome to our warm-up speaker, Doug.
My name is Doug. I'm an alcoholic. Nice to be back in Tulare County. I got sober in Tulare County. I see a lot of people I haven't seen for a number of years. I took my last grape Sunday night, February 4th, 1990. Now, I didn't know it was going to be my last drink. Certainly did not plan for it to be my last drink. But a little later after that drink, the Visalia Police Department decided to do a little intervention on me in my car. And I got to spend the night downtown jail. I got out the next morning and went home, took a shower, went to work real quick, and I was an outside sales rep, so I could kind of come and go as I wanted to. I had a couple things I had to do here in Tulare. Go back to Visalia, called my sister, who's an attorney, and she said, you need to call AA, because this was my third drunk driving. And then I took out a number that the sheriff who booked me out of jail gave me, looked up AA in the phone book, and here, what do you know, it's the same phone number. So I phoned Dottie. A lot of people here remember Dottie over at central office. And she said, well, you want me to send somebody to talk to? And I said, yeah, I got to talk to somebody. And half an hour later, three guys are knocking on my door. I don't know where they find them so quick. And they spent a couple hours there talking to them. I learned a little bit about alcoholism and stuff, because I had made it a serious effort all my drinking not to learn anything about alcoholism. I knew what a drunk was. I wasn't a drunk because I didn't drink cheap wine in brown bags. It had to have a cork. I like Jack Daniels. Anyway, so I talked to these guys, and later learned that this was what was called a 12-step. And one of them said, we want to go to a meeting tonight. And I, yeah. So a guy named Harry C. picked me up. We went, and it ended up being like three blocks away from where I was living. There's a men's group over on Burke Street, just north of Tulare in Visalia. And the amazing thing about that tonight is there was like 12 guys there, I think. Unless I'm mistaken, three of us are here tonight, 23 and a half years later. Rick was one of them, and Paul was the other one. And Paul actually ended up becoming my sponsor. And I sat at that meeting, I listened to these guys share, and they were sharing about their experience, strength, and hope. And I learned more, a little bit about alcoholism, and, you know, the lights are sort of starting to go up. I'm still a little under the influence, because I'd blown a .28 at 3 o'clock that morning. But I walked out of that meeting. They all came up afterwards and introduced themselves. I walked out of that meeting with three things. One, a little better understanding of alcoholism. I realized I was suffering from one of the symptoms of alcoholism that is called pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. Because at that time, I literally didn't give a shit. I went to work, and I drank. And while I was working, I drank. I worked for a liquor company, in and out of bars, restaurants all day long, and we drank. The last thing I walked out of that meeting with was hope. Just a little bit of hope that maybe something would work for me. So, you know, I went to that next, one of the guys gave me a meeting schedule for start going to meetings, because my sister also said, go to as many meetings, get something signed so you can show it to the judge, because he's liable to hammer you. So I went to a whole bunch of meetings and strung the legal proceedings out till the end of April. Got to court. The guy they called in front of me was a gangbanger type of guy, wearing Levi's, white t-shirt, sandals. In there for exactly the same thing I was there for. And the judge hammered his ass. He got 18 months in state prison. And I'm sitting there and said, oh, shit. So I get up there, go back and forth with the judge a little bit. I had a couple people with me. A letter on my behalf was presented to him by a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I presented that I've been going to these meetings for, at that time, a little over 2 months. Said I had gone about 50 or 60. And he said, well, here's what we're going to do. So the sentence is still 18 months, but I'm going to suspend 12 of it in lieu of you going to two meetings a week for the length of your probation, which is 3 years. So you'll have to do 6 months. and then the fine. And the fine, I look at today, my third DUI fine is a lot cheaper than the first DUI is right now. I don't know how you could afford a third DUI. And so, you know, I had to report like 2 weeks later, and the last thing he said before I walked out, he says, if you don't complete this and I see you in this court again before your DUIs are off your thing, you're going to state prison. So a week later, I turned myself into Bob Wiley, went out to Road Gap. That was on a Monday. I think the meetings out there, H and I, were Tuesday or Wednesday. David, do you remember? Wednesday. And David, I think, was the first guy who brought a meeting out there. David Grassel brought some meetings out there. Some other couple of guys from that Monday night meeting I was at brought meetings. And I started to work the steps gradually. I was not in any big hurry, in all honesty, like I think a lot of us aren't. And so I just ended up only having to do 2 months out there. They were really crowded, and I minded my own business and went to the AA meeting once a week. The job put me in contact with the officer on a regular basis. And I don't know what they saw, but I got woke up at 3 o'clock one morning after a little over 60 days and said, you're going home. Started going to meetings right away, getting involved. Now, since I've only got 10 minutes, and 5 of it have already been used up, I'm going to fast forward to today. And what I do today is I have learned through 23 and a half years how to save my ass on a daily basis. And I start out every morning with the Serenity Prayer. And my personal opinion is the Serenity Prayer is one of the most important things you can learn in AA. I don't know how many times I have said the Serenity Prayer, but I say it every morning when I get up. We say it every time you go to a meeting, and I say it any time shit hits the fan or even I get upset or uncomfortable, because one of the things I was taught is you can start your day over and you can use the Serenity Prayer. And I've done that I don't know how many times. And I come to believe that the Serenity Prayer encompasses the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. To say the prayer, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change. For me, that's steps 1, 2, and 3. Those are things I can't change, but I have to accept them if I'm going to stay sober. Then the courage to change the things I said. Steps 4 to 10. Do the inventory. Admit your faults. You know, make that list. Make the amends. Do all that stuff. And I've done this often enough now that when I'm saying it, if there's something going on, I know right away what it is and what I have to do to correct it. And then the last part, courage to change, no. Wisdom to know the difference, steps 11 and 12. To get me back out in the community, to be of service to other alcoholics or non-alcoholics, whatever, and to live a good life. And my life is pretty good today. You know, I've got to see 2 grandchildren born. I was there, got the whole boat done within 30 minutes, and that's two of the most wonderful things that happened to me in my life. So little kids are special. They've never seen me drunk, never seen me high. Hopefully they never will. When I first got sober and I hooked up with Paul as my sponsor, I looked at him, and he goes to a lot of meetings. If you know Paul, he goes to a lot of meetings. I'm saying, man, what the hell? And here I am, 23 and a half meetings sober. This is my 7th meeting this week. You know, I'm turning into a Paul somehow or another. And I love it. I go because I'm retired. I have time to do it. And I enjoy it. I've got a home group in Visalia, or in Clovis, that reminds me of the breath fresh air group that I was involved with here in Visalia, halfway between Visalia and Tulare. And the first night I walked in there, sat down halfway through the meeting, I said, I just found my home group. Because I'd gone to a bunch of other ones, and you always hear these stories, people go other places, well, they don't do it right. And there for a while, Fresno didn't do it right, as far as I was concerned. I can argue that point. They do it different. But one thing, some of the meetings I go to in Fresno, I was at a birthday meeting a week ago Wednesday night, and there were maybe 40 people there. And one of the speakers who knew everybody there pretty much, the regulars, said, you know, I'm looking around, there's over 500 years of sobriety sitting in this meeting. They've got a lot of, I mean, 20 years in Fresno where you're like a newcomer, not a newcomer, but I mean, you're no old timer, you're still middle-aged. And you know, you don't see a lot of that as much, I'll take that back, in Visalia. At least when I was here, I left in 2006, I had to get out of town behind a toxic relationship, and I had a butcher knife thrown at me on the way out. And it was a lot of fun. So I moved to Fresno, and I'm really happy here. I went to work for a recovery company. I enjoyed that for 6 years, and then it became a little too much. I was working with parolees, and they at times are not the most workable people you can deal with. Most of them really don't want to get recovery. They just want to get their parole agent off their ass. But some of them do, and I run into them on a regular basis at meetings. I know where three of them work, that were my clients, and I see them on a regular basis, talk to them. So, you know, it's still a success. And I'm really happy today. I'm happy to be able to, Rick invited Sandra, myself, comes out here. I'd recommend Sandra to him while he was trying to get me to speak, I think. So I wouldn't have to, and then she accepts and volunteers me. So anyway, I'm just grateful to be here, grateful to be sober. My 10 minutes is up, and I don't want to take any extra time from Sandra, because she runs this really neat little chocolate sour district, and I buy pure beeswax candles from her. And if I take too much of her time, she's going to raise the prices. I can't have that. I'd like to thank you for letting me share, and thank you for keeping me sober one more day.
Thank you. Let's take a short break. There's CDs up here for sale. Throw $2 on the table and take whatever you'd like. And then there's tons of cookies back there. And I want to thank the audience for being so well behaved. And let's give a rousing welcome to our featured speaker, Sandra.
Good evening, Tulare. My name is Sandra Faith, and I'm a recovering alcoholic. And thank you so much, Doug. You mean so much to me, and I've heard your share a couple of times, and Doug is just a really special friend, and I'll kind of get into that as I close my story, because, you know, God does for us what we cannot do for ourselves. And I got sober in October of 1992 when I was 22, and I'm coming up, I guess October will be 21 years. It's kind of surreal because, you know, I feel 16. Really, honestly. And it's only by the grace of God in this program. So I'm really, really grateful and thankful to be here. So what it was like, what it happened, and what it's like now. What it was like was when I grew up in Bass Lake, actually I was born in Fresno, and ended up in Bass Lake when I was, I don't know, maybe, you know, six or so, I was pretty young. And I started drinking when I was 9, you know, and I have a little bit of time to share tonight. What time does this meeting end? When I stop? Someone please have my back and just kind of go like this. So part of my story is, you know, when I grew up, and this is important to say because it's just kind of transcended through, you know, kind of my life and who I am today, but my mom, you know, the whole slew of my family, they're all alcoholics. I don't question it anymore. I really do believe that this is a kind of a genetic disease. I know that when I put alcohol in my system reacts differently than somebody else's. I don't have an off button. And I didn't necessarily need, I think, a reason to drink, but I certainly had some. You know, so my childhood was a little bit rough. And one of the first memories, and, you know, children are precious, and I know that we all have stories, you know, and we all have had childhoods. And kids are very impressionable, you know, and I was three. And my alcoholic father that tried to strangle my mom when she was pregnant with me, you know, didn't want a daughter. And I had this memory, and it's really weird because I've had a lot of deja vu in Fresno about this place, but, you know, I was running after him because he didn't want me, and I remember hearing that. So right there was an abandonment issue. And I just remember kind of shutting down, and I was in this horrific, St. Helens, this Catholic school, whatever. We moved to the mountains, and I had a new dad, and so I had all of this stuff kind of bottled in, and I was quiet, and my brother, who was 3 years older, was my world, you know. And at nine, somehow, you know, my mom was busy in the bars. They traveled a lot. I guess on the exterior, it looked like, you know, maybe we had money. I don't know. But I found, you know, a 2-gram vial of cocaine on his dresser, and I told my friend, she was so sweet and innocent. I think we were in fourth or fifth grade. To grab the alcohol, and we met in the middle of, you know, Back Lake Road and jammed this cigarette button and stuck the straw in and figured out how to do cocaine, and I found my new best friend, you know. And so I didn't really have a childhood. You know, my dad said, get a job when you're 12 or you're grounded, you know. And he was a very, very strict father. And so I did, you know. And I started drinking every day, cream de menthe on my ice cream, you know, hot potties at Christmas. That was just, I was off and running. You know, I remember going to Bass Lake Elementary School with moonshine in a baby food thing. I don't even know how that happened. How does that happen? I don't know. So going into my teens, all I know is that for as long as I could remember, I never wanted to be alive. You know, I was one of those that was just, didn't understand life, you know, was in a tremendous amount of pain. I don't know if it was depression. I don't know if it was alcoholism. I don't know what it was. I just know that when I think back on my childhood, there wasn't a day that I went by in my life that I didn't wish the school bus didn't go off the cliff, you know, that, you know, and that's the way I lived. But when I put alcohol in my system and it went down and it was warm and fuzzy and, oh, I drank gin and I puked so hard, I can't even believe I would pick up another drink, but I did, you know. And experimented with drugs and whatever, but mainly it was alcohol became my best friend. It did not talk back. It did not judge me. You know, it helped me go to sleep. And I found, you know, and I found, I know this is an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, but my story is I found crystal meth at the age of 12, and I really liked it, you know. And where my parents were, I don't know. So, and, you know, for that short period of time, when I look back, 9 to 22, you know, it's been a tremendous amount of time. You know, a lot of people think for 40 years, you know. But for me, it just got to the point because this stepfather that was raising me was like, you know, warriors don't cry. You know, you're a special girl. You're, you know, so that was just stuck these feelings more and more and more. And it got to a point when I was, you know, about 19, I couldn't stuff my feelings anymore, you know. And I had a really hard exterior. I didn't trust people. I saw abuse in relationships. It's all this, you know, adult children of alcoholics syndrome, you know, and I couldn't explain any of that. And I remembered I was in LA at the time, and I went to Bass Lake, and it had changed, and Juicy's and whatever, and I was always kind of a cute girl, well-groomed, kind of like this, you know, but I drank a lot, and I could drink any of you guys under the table, and that is a fact. And so one day, we, you know, I get up there, and it's 7:30 in the morning, and I'm drinking a red beer while all my other friends are having eggs and bacon, you know, and then I hit the tequila, and by the time we got to, you know, Redinger, I downed a pint of that, and fell off the boat, and I had a third degree burn on my arm, and I don't know, we got back to the cabin, and pulled off the squatters over there, and not proud to say it was in my inventory, and I'm okay with it today, but I pushed a pregnant lady down, and the husband, like, punched me out, and I broke my tooth, and I fell, and my acrylic nails flew off, and by the end of that night, they still tried to take me to Juicy's, and I said, don't you know who I am, you know? I don't want to sit there, I want to sit over there. and they politely, you know, threw me up over their shoulder and escorted me out and tried to put me in a cop car, and it took about three of them. I kicked the cage. I kicked the cage off and called back up and hogtied me and kicked me off in a Bronco to Madera. And I got a huge fine for that. I didn't even have car keys, but yeah, it was a public intoxication. And so that was, I think I was maybe 20. I wasn't even 21 yet. And I freaked out. I freaked out. I broke all the metacarpals in my hand because I had issues with Mexican, sorry, you know, my dad was Spanish-Mexican, and they were mocking me, and I didn't like it. And, you know, it was just a horrible experience. And if that wasn't an incomprehensible, demoralizing situation, and there were many, there was no way that I thought I was an alcoholic. They had to remove me and put me in this concrete wall because I lost my mind. And I don't know how someone let me out, and I'm sitting on the bench. All I wanted was a cigarette, you know, and this little cleaning lady came by and she said, "Sweetheart, what happened to you?" And in that moment, you know, I knew that something wasn't right. But I did not, like Doug said, an alcoholic to me was that great Bobby who had his, you know, bottle in the bag. We would have him over for Christmas. He had the blue nose. He was the alcoholic. I did not ever think that my parents were alcoholics, that the way I drank was alcoholic. It was very normal to me, you know, doing a little bit of drugs to get through my finals. You know, that isn't no big deal with that. And I continued, you know, to drink. And but I did get a nudge from the judge, and so I had to go to AA meetings. And God bless that guy, you know, and I'm so glad that they have programs. I got to write a letter to that judge and say, "Thank you for saving my life," you know. I mocked it. I would bring in my cup of JD and Coke and come into a meeting, and it was funny because I was so young. The first meeting I was in LA was Rodeo. Every person had gray hair, and that is not a joke. It was a format like this. It was really well lit. I'm like this tough kid, you know, got my alcohol, and, you know, just, you know, get my paper signed off, and no one kicked me out. I know they could smell the Jack Daniels, you know, I don't know. And I never went back to that meeting, though. And I continued to drink a little bit longer, and what happened was I just could not suppress the feeling, and the alcohol stopped working at, you know, even then. So a really good friend that we partied pretty hard got sober and came over and kind of 12-stepped me and gave me his big book, and I still have that. And he pointed me to the direction to this ladies group, and I was so angry. I was so angry. So I wore my Corona sweatshirt. It's like I wanted to go, but I'm like, "Don't you know who I am?" You know, and they didn't kick me out for wearing the Corona sweatshirt or anything like that. And so they said, "Okay, I hear, get a sponsor." You know, I went back to Nexus, and it was hard. Anybody that is new, it was hard. I was so frustrated. I'm in LA. I cannot find this church. I do not know where I'm going. They have no MapQuest. And I don't know why I didn't turn around and give up. I don't know how I made it into that meeting, but I did. And so I asked this lady who was deaf to be my sponsor, and I thought, you know what, she won't tell me what to do. And so she kind of like, you know, talked funny, and that didn't last very long. And so I was sober for about maybe six, you know, a little over 60, 70 days, miserable. And I chose to drink again, and I couldn't even get through the six-pack, you know. I was so physically sick. And I had really bad migraines, and so I had all this medication. I had every intent of committing suicide that night. And I thought, I had a bottle in each hand. And I said, "If there is a God and I wake up, I'll do it a different way." And I woke up hungover as shit with the, you know, sun just beating down on me. And I strolled up to Fairfax, which was a huge meeting, and I was done. I was done. There was so much shame in my person that I could no longer pretend wasn't there, you know? And thank God that meeting was dark, because I could just kind of sneak in, and I sat down and just cried, you know? And I can't tell you the last time I cried, you know? And some night, and it was a man, you know, kind of put his hand on me, and he said, "You know, you're going to be okay." And I think back on that, because honestly, when I I can't comprehend that I can sober a day at a time for as long as I have, you know. Because when I say and I express to you, it is a miracle that I'm sober. Because I know, just as I am an alcoholic, you know, that I should be dead. You know, I really should. And my story isn't about, you know, being a gangster over there and being a gang. I know those guardian angels. I was in a lot of really crazy situations. I just know that the God of my understanding today had a plan for me. And when I came in the room and they said, it's only by the grace of the 12th step. If I came in and Jesus was on the wall, I would have ran out the door. You know, if Buddha was on the wall, any of these, a higher power, this program is so amazing how it's written. Simple, these 12 steps. It's got a higher power. Okay, I can do that. You know, my higher power, when I would walk to that Fairfax meeting, was the big, huge light, street light. And if it went off, that was like my higher power region at me. And I get a chuckle today whenever I see that, because, you know, it's so much more than that today. And my second sponsor that I picked was blind. And because I had heard enough in meetings about this inventory, and I was like, if I don't have to see her, I can do it. And you know what? What a beautiful woman. Sophia, she was Russian, and she was blind. She had this beautiful dog. And let me tell you guys, if she would have told me to stand on my head over there butt naked in front of all of you, I would have done it. Because I was desperate. I did not want to drink again. And it was the hardest thing I've ever done in my life to give up the control. You know, and the way she worked the steps with me, I didn't have a car at the time, and I walked. I went to the 6:30 log cabin meeting. I took a break. By God's grace, I worked with this great guy out of his house. I went to a 10 o'clock. I went to a 12 o'clock. I met her at 5 for pizza. We went to another one. I went to the 8:30. And then sometimes, if I, you know, if I couldn't sleep, I'd go to a candlelight. 6 meetings a day. For at least the first 90 days, because that's how bad the obsession for me to drink was. And here I am in this condo, on my knees in the fetal position, wanting to drink so bad, all alone. Like, what's stopping me? I can get in my car and go down to 7-Eleven and get a beer. No one will know. And I would hear Sophia, and I would call Sophia, you know? And I was really angry. I was one of those that would come up, and they had formats like this. And I would just stand up, you know, and just say, you're lying. You couldn't have drank like me. There's no way you have 4 years, you know, or 3 years. You know, I was so angry. And then the little old lady would just like, keep coming back, honey. They never kicked me out, you know. In that same meeting, I was just like, don't you know who I am? You know, I'm 21 years old, and what do you, I'm never going to get to drink at my wedding, or what happens if someone dies and at a funeral, and then all of these things. And guess what? You know, I've been divorced twice. You know, I walked through suicides. I mean, I've gone through it all sober. You know, I was just scared. And some guy had the courage to stand up and say, well, Candy, if you're bored, you must be boring. We do sober softball on Sundays, and you're welcome. Talk to you after the meeting. And you know what? Good for him. And I showed up, and I went to a sober dance, and, you know, I got involved, and I took direction from my sponsor, Sissett, and would stand at the door and greet. I didn't like women. You know, I had a radius. I didn't let anyone in my space. And she shared things like feather, because I was really loud, and, you know, I had to be seen, and I had to be heard, you know, and, I just dove in with all feet. I took commitment, you know. And what I'd like to share is the foundation. You know, that woman was so beautiful. And guess what happened to Sophia? She went out again. You know, she drank. Oh, well, you know, I have no judgment towards that. To each his own. But what she did for me, building my foundation, is a blessing, and she'll always be, you know, a light of the program. We all have different journeys. I really hope and wish and pray that nobody has to experience it again. But the truth is, some of us do, and some of us may come back, and some of us may not. And, you know, my heart hurts on a daily basis. I wouldn't be honest if I didn't say that, because my heart does hurt for the alcoholics who still suffer. It really does. And part of my spiritual experience is that I had to make a choice to really try to live in the world with the 12 sects and the 12 traditions, not completely immersed and submerged by the love and the protection of the program. It was really easy for me to walk into an AA meeting and just totally be okay, and you know, but out there, I wanted to rip people's heads off, you know, and it took a long time for that anger to go away, and I sought outside counseling. At 10 years of sobriety, I almost hit someone in a car. Red rage, all of that rage came back for whatever reason, and I know it was because of, you know, the relationship I picked. I started drinking when I was 9. I was not in a non-drinking environment. I did not know what a social drinker was, because still to this day, I have met very few that ever drank like me, so I consider them social drinking. You know, what I know today is that I don't want to be a part of someone's life intimately and in my home that has anything to do with a substance. I don't want any mind-altering substances, you know. These are all, this is a journey I had to go through to discover that. And by God's grace and the graciousness of the people, you know, that would listen to me and hear my story, you know, helped me discover that through the steps. I would come into meetings. I ended up moving to Las Vegas. And, you know, and this is it, 12, 13 years of sobriety, crying, every day crying, saying, I don't fucking understand this. When are the promises going to come true? I cannot do another inventory. I want to puke. You know, you tell me to let go and let God. What does that mean? You know, you don't leave 5 minutes before the miracle. You know, if you come enough to the meetings, you'll start to memorize it whether you want to or not. You know, and I'm really grateful for that, because that is God doing for me what I cannot do for myself. I had to go through these really emotional, dark places in my recovery, you know, learning more about myself. And I would hear the preamble, you know, don't leave 5 minutes before the miracle. God couldn't would if he was God, you know. And you know what? I kept coming back. And I knew, you know, I'm glad I'm a fighter. And anyone that's not a fighter, let me give you permission to be a fighter. Because I've had to fight my way in these rooms too. I was asked to leave a woman's closed Alcoholics Anonymous meeting with my 8-month-old baby, because babies weren't allowed. That devastated me. You know, I don't cry. I motherfucked them all and walked out, you know, and thank God there were some beautiful gentlemen in a men's dad, and they said, come on, honey, you can come in with us. And they allowed me and my baby to come in. And they just sat with me and let me cry and have my dignity, because you know what? That crushed me. There are things that have happened in these rooms, and I wish that I could, you know what, I'm a classy woman and my favorite word is the F word. Waited, so I know we're in a church and for you, but can't help it. Sometimes I will try harder. You know, it's like the traditions tell me. You know, I had a situation a couple nights ago where I was in a meeting, and like Doug said, you know, the formats are different. I'm in a different town, you know. When I come into the rooms, I lock on to the 12 steps and the 12 traditions or principles that are usually posted, you know. I love the preamble, all of these things, but there's a group conscience, you know, and so every meeting has its own format. And I'm grateful in this day and age that we have a lot of choices, you know. So if a meeting format doesn't work for me, I get to find another meeting, you know. And I have to kind of walk myself through that. And so what I tell myself and what I hear in my head is principles before personalities, you know. I was taught things in early sobriety, like, you know, not to be at go to a meeting late, you know. There's been times I've had to. Being a few minutes late is better than not at all. You know, if a speaker speaks, you know, you stand in line and practice patience and shake that person's hand and tell them thank you. You know, you greet that newcomer at the door, you give them the number. These are all things that aren't necessarily written in the big book, but these are things that are strongly suggested. And that's how I work with people today. You know, what was shared with me, I try to give back. And so going through these steps, it ended up being 11 and 12 for me. I had to continue to seek my spirituality in this program. You know, I read the big book time after time. I had commitments. I sponsored women. I worked with a sponsor. You know, I'm not one of those that believes in only one inventory. I've had to do many. Call an extended 10 steps, because I had a lot of stuff that I had to uncover, like they did an onion. You know, I had to peel all those layers off. And what it came down to is I had to continually seek what my higher power was. And I chose to go to outside counseling again. A woman that, you know, was sober for a long, long time. And I'm really glad because, you know, this meeting, I told you, fetal position, getting sober, that's what me staying in this marriage was. And I would do it all again just to be the woman I am today, you know. And it was the most painful thing, and I wouldn't wish it on my worst enemy, you know. It was that I was at that spiritual crossroads, you know, and it talks about it in our preamble. You know, there comes a time, you know, I know now when they say the path becomes narrower, you know. It was this squashing. It was just this kind of squashing before, you know, my life could kind of broaden. And when the spiritual experience finally came, it was forever and ever, and I was a changed person overnight. And it was so amazing to walk into this room that I had gone into for 14 solid years. And I knew, I'm sharing one more time, crying at my lunch, you know, and I'd wipe my eyes and go back to work, you know, just, ooh, about this marriage, you know. And I knew that guy over there was judging me as rolling his eyes. God, here she goes again, you know, here she goes again, you know. And there was nothing better, because you cannot pretend to have this program work. You cannot pretend to have the light of your higher shine so bright that you want what that person has. You cannot fake that. And so when I got to walk back in the room, it gives me goosebumps. And he looked at me and gave me the biggest hug, and he said, I am so grateful that I got to hear you every day for 14 years cry and pitch a fit, and you never gave up, and that has given me so much courage. You know? It's amazing. And so I get to reflect on that today, because you know what? In no way would I ever disvalidate anybody's feelings. Because I was the girl, when I came in these rooms to get sober, that I would have stood there and let every single one of you punch me as hard as you can on any part of my person, and I would have taken it. But if one of you would have punched me emotionally in one way, I would have crumbled. Because that's what I got to learn in these rooms. I didn't need a reason to drink, but I had a lot of feelings that I didn't know how to handle. And my options, death, institutions, sobriety. You know, death via suicide, death via, you know, homicide, I don't know, shooting some big guy and having him shoot me back, I don't know, you know. So a lot of my story has been about the emotional recovery. And I did all of the things that were suggested in the program. And what I did, which was the biggest one, was not give up 5 minutes before the miracle. And it was many, many days after days after days after days that it took for me to not leave 5 minutes before the miracle. I love my life today. There is not one morning that I wake up and I want to die. There's not one for the past 6 years. I'm like, if it's my last day, I am going out with a bang. And you know what my bang is today? Being of service. Whether it's picking up a piece of paper on the floor, whether it's allowing that really scary looking wet drunk come and sweep off my patio, you know, where people are like, don't let him in, he's going to steal from you. It's all right. You know, people in my community, they come and ask me, you're the only person that doesn't get tagged. How is that? You know? Because I've got an amazing higher power from this program that started with the light bulb, that is so much more, that is undeniable, you know? And the things that I used to hear, except the things I cannot change, you know, the courage to change the things I can. You were speaking foreign language to me, and I'm 13 years sober, and I went through a lot of meetings, you know? And, you know, and along with that, even suffering disappointment from that higher power, you know, taking a stance in something, trudging down a road that I didn't think that I ever emotionally could, forgiving at levels, I threw my hands up and said, if you're asking me to do this, I'm going to get drunk, kind of stuff, you know. But the graciousness of it is I didn't have to do it alone, you know. And I'm not one of those that ever came to AA looking at it like a popularity contest. You know, I was kind of chatting with Rick a little bit, and I said, you know, my recovery has been quite contrary. I didn't really go to a lot of social meetings or a lot of social events. I came in because when I walked through that door, I was saving my life. You know, that's the way I chose to look at AA. Just like I don't date guys from the office, I never dated guys from AA, which may have been a mistake. I always picked the wet ones, but, you know, but I was, because I was very private, you know, and I took things like that were suggested in the program. You know, I get to tell my sponsor and my, you know, taking a leap of faith to trust, you know, that she and I can have these intimate, you know, conversations or one-on-one with anyone. I'll tell you anything. Actually, I would probably tell you all of you anything because I really don't have anything to hide, but, I was just honestly always afraid of being judged. You know, I never wanted to be that woman that was like, oh, she was with him and him and him. I don't know. You know, that's kind of my story. I'm just kind of private that way. So I know that there comes a time, like it talks about, you know, in our big book, that God is either all or God is nothing. And that was the spiritual experience. God is either all or God is nothing. And I kept suiting up and showing up and coming to AA meetings. And when I didn't know where else to go at 13 and 14 years, I would drive around my meeting place that had meetings, you know, six times a day. And I would sit in my car, and I would write in my journal, and I would wait for the next meeting. Because you know what? That's what I did when I had 2 days. You know, and it had come to a time that that's what I had to do again. And I am so grateful. Like I said, if you can just continue to show up, it's like the program just starts to work you. And I've had a lot of blessings in recovery. I mean, I don't know why after that initial 90 days when the obsession, you know, the drink lifted, and it really did, I started going to bars and playing pool sober. You know, Sophia told me, you know what, Papa, you can do whatever you want. You're young. Go. You take your higher power everywhere. You can always pause and go in the bathroom and say the Serenity Prayer. And I believed her, and I did it. And you know what? I've become a national championship pool player sober, you know? And the coolest part of that is that I don't care what religious organization you participate in, or I don't know how many AA, you know, committees you have that go into these dank, dark bars, you know, showing the light of recovery, you know, and I've gotten to do that the last, you know, 10 years, and that's pretty cool. And there's about 5 of them that have gotten sober, you know. They got curious one day as to why I didn't drink, you know, and after, God, one guy had 6 DUIs. I can't believe he wasn't done forever. And he got sober, and he got married, and it's just the gift, you know, the gift, because you know what? My higher power, who I choose to call God, and I love God. I love God. I owe my sobriety, my life, my relationships, my friendships, my finances, my everything. You know, it's just a privilege that I get to show up and kind of utilize these gifts that He's given me, honestly. And, it's just a humbling journey. I mean, if you would have even told me 10 years ago that my life would be what it is today, there's no way. And I looked up that real father when I was 2 years sober, and we made an amend to each other. He was sober about 4 or 5 years, not in AA. We had a wonderful relationship, and it's really sad to think what money can do to someone. You know, he came into an inheritance, whatever, and thought that he could buy my love, and it was kind of a really funny experience. And just really knowing the difference between recovery through the 12 steps, you know, and just a dry drunk, or even, you know, and I don't say this to offend anybody, because I'm a spiritual woman, not religious, but even some, you know, some of those programs, I believe with all of my heart, statistically, the success rate of the 12 steps. And I think because it's a gentle way, you know, it's, you know, very biblically based. But it's in such a layman way that spoke to my heart and what I needed, because I was a rebel, you know. And part of that foundation was my sponsor saying, you know, Sandy, you can do whatever you want, but don't drink. You know, she didn't tell me, don't date anybody within the first 12 months of your sobriety. She didn't say, don't go to bars because I think you're going to drink. She said, do whatever you want, except don't drink. And you know what? I could do that. And I did that. And I didn't, the rebel button wasn't pushed. I had a choice. And that's what I like about the 12 steps. You know, it gives us a choice. And, you know, working with her, I dug right into the fourth step. Again, it's just the truth. I knew that when we spent 10 hours in her apartment that day, you know, working on that fifth step, she didn't see me. And that was huge. And that's just the way that I was. But what a relief, you know. Just what a relief. And the way I feel today is that, like I said, this program worked me. I was sharing with Rick, you know, when I moved here from Las Vegas, finally, you know, getting the second divorce, you know, taking care of my mother and my teenage daughter and having a lot of responsibilities, you know, I started this other business and I have another business, and so I'm working 24/7, and in no way is that an excuse not to go to meetings. But this was just kind of the reality of where I was. And it's like, here I am in this little tiny store in the Power District, and all of these sober people just start coming to me, you know? And Doug was one of the first ones that I met. And I don't even know if you were going to a lot of meetings then. And we just, you know, kind of connected. And then Jen showed up. And, you know, she was a baby newcomer. And we've just become best friends. It's almost, you know, she's coming up on a year. And that's huge, you know? I've had random people just come up and offer to help me. That is in the program. It's like, let me move that wood for you. And, you know, I trust AA. AA is my family. I may get irritated about certain things as far as formats and whatever, but the truth is, I know that I could come up to a number of you and ask for help. Whether it's whatever, will you please come and help me move lumber? I would almost bet my life that you would say yes. You know, if it was, hey, I'm confused about this page in the book, would you mind sharing your experience and some hope? You know, I don't trust a lot of people, and I have really learned to trust Alcoholics Anonymous members. It doesn't mean that I'm vigilant. It doesn't mean, you know, not vigilant. It doesn't mean that, you know, I don't have boundaries and I don't have, you know, respect. I respect you all. Never abuse that. You know, it is an honor and a privilege to be able to be a part of such a spectacular, wonderful, loving thing. I could cry just thinking about that, just like that. Because I mean it from my heart, you know. And I took a lot of risks, you know. Alcoholics Anonymous taught me how to take risks, but in a different way, an emotional risk, not a physical risk. You know, through all that anger, I broke my back. You know, I love taking risks, so I desert quad-based and wrecked and jacked up my back and that stuff. So I'd rather, you know, just kind of sit through it and meditate, or I don't know. There's another way. I'm definitely more in tune with my anger today. But, you know, so through the steps, I was willing to do things differently. And it took a lot of courage, even when I was 24, to look up that real father. It took a lot of courage, and it took a lot of miraculous, you know, success of the steps working in my life to even allow me to have him in my life. You know, and then rectifying the relationship with the stepfather. And, you know, the second marriage, I had to literally go through counseling, and I had to work with my sponsor to get through that wedding because I wanted to elope, and it was going to be, you know, my real father and my stepfather, and then the father that my mother left my stepfather for, his best friend, all in one room, are you kidding? And then my brother. I was like, talk about anxiety. And you know what? I got through that through the graciousness of the steps, you know, my sponsor and a therapist and suiting up and showing up, you know. And so part of me moving back to Fresno was to, you know, continue this relationship with my real father, you know. And boy, what a letdown. You know, I mean, he helped me start this shop, and guess what it turned into? It turned into a competition, you know? All of it, you know, I worked really hard for everything that I've had, and their gifts, because they could be gone tomorrow, it's okay, you know? And, you know, all of a sudden he opens a store, you know, and all of a sudden, you know, he buys a hot rod like mine, and all of a sudden, you know, and I just, you know what, I had to let him go, and I wish I could stand in front of you guys and say I did it in a gracious way, and I didn't. You know, and I would make an amends to him maybe someday, you know, for the language I used, but not the things that I said, you know, and I'm not perfect, and I'm really grateful that this program does not require perfection from me, you know, even at 20 some odd years of sobriety, I'm not perfect, you know, and I still can react to hurtful things, and that was a hurtful thing. You know, and I'm okay with it, though, because I know that, you know, God loved me no matter what. And I know that this, too, shall pass. And I know that when I lay my head at night, that my side of the street is clean, you know. And I don't have, you know, I had to get to a place of saying, Sandra, you cannot save the world. Because, honestly, I wanted to save the world. I can only work on myself, suit up and show up, let the light of this program shine, and just do the next best thing. And that's where the peace came. You know, for many years, too, I would get stuck on what's meditation, you know. My head is so loud, I would just, oh, my God, there's no way. You know, I don't get that. And the last 6 months, I get it. It just takes what it takes, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. You know, I was one of the slower ones. And I like I said, I am who I am. A lot of times I'm really grateful. Even though I was afraid, I didn't let you know I was afraid, but I was very vocal. And so that, you know, so I don't freak out when I see those people. There were crazy people that came into the Drug and Alcohol Center in Las Vegas, and they wanted to kick them out. And you know what? I would get pissed. And I'm like, okay, emergency meeting, we need a group conscience on this. If it's done in a format, great, but no one has the control to kick these people out because they should have kicked me out a number of times, you know. And I wasn't on psychedelics. I was very hostile. How do you know I wasn't going to have a knife and stab you, you know? So I'm very passionate about certain things because, you know what, I needed a second chance. And by God's grace, I got a second chance, and I don't know why, you know. It was the judge. I don't know. Because I didn't know what Alcoholics Anonymous was. You know, I really didn't. And I know in my innermost self that the drink's not going to fix anything, you know. And through this spiritual experience the last 5 years, I went through a brutal family suicide where she put two butcher knives and split her throat. And I got to walk through that and clean that up and help in that situation. You know, 3 months later, my best, you know, pool teammate had a stroke, was in ICU at 33, you know. And I got to be down there for that. And 2 weeks later, you know, my other teammate committed suicide. You know, and after that, you know, and it just went on and on and on, and it did not stop. And this was as I was getting closer to my higher power, as I was getting closer to the God of my understanding that I was discovering, the more the shit was hitting the fan. And the more I needed Alcoholics Anonymous. And the more, you know what, guys? I'm telling you this. The more I understand people with 22 years of sobriety blowing their head off. Because I will never be the woman that will walk in this room and tell you everything is okay when it's not okay. And that is a gift that God gave me, and I don't know why. Because I heard early on that the ego is edging God out. And without God, I am nothing. And it tells that to me in the big book. And it took me a long time to discover that. And not leave 5 minutes before the miracle. Because that's what it came down to. The closer I got to that higher power, completely surrendering, the more was taken away. Having that same husband, you know, accused of sexually abusing my daughter. Devastating. Devastating. You know, all of these things that are devastating. Beyond my wildest dreams, did I ever think that I would go through these things sober? Absolutely not. Walking through a suicide attempt for my daughter a year ago. By God's grace in the 12 Steps to Use program, I go through these things sober and with dignity and grace. And I can say that peacefully today because that's the woman I am as a result of these steps. All of a sudden working me, you know? I don't do anything spectacular in my day, except I do wake up and I say, you know what, good morning, God, let's rock this day. You know, because if it's going to be my last day, I want to make the best of it. I have no complaints today. You know, I'm at a financial crossroads. My life could significantly change tomorrow. And I'm okay with that. I am okay with that. If I had to file bankruptcy, if I had to shut everything down, if I had to, oh well, it was fun. You know, it was a fun journey. Because all I can do is the best. And for me, that was the overachiever, the perfectionist, that would work that much harder for one of my three or four dads to say, I'm proud of you. You know, I don't need that anymore. Because it takes someone like Doug, that I love and respect so much, for him to just come and offer to help me, you know, and to say he's proud of me. That means significantly more than anything else in the world to me. And that's Alcoholics Anonymous members. You know, I haven't known Doug that long, a year, you know, but that's the relationships I have. I may not have a ton, you know, and I'm grateful for that because the five I have are so special. You know, we go to this meeting that I hate. I don't like the word hate. I do have. But we have fun. And you know what? She's sweet. And we have fun. As long as we don't drink or use no matter what, you know, we have fun. So we're blowing up fireworks in the Chipotle parking lot. And it was all good. And we cleaned up our mess. And it was fun. You know? I mean, I did not come in these rooms to be rigid. And I did that for a long time and it didn't work. You know, I thought if I'm perfect, you know, this is too easy to be gracious to me, and that's not the truth. You know, the truth is that I have fun. I have fun, and I'm not perfect. But I have a lot of fun, and I don't drink or use no matter what, you know. And for me, when I broke my back and I had all of that medication, you know, I had to take one in the hospital, and then I went home by my own choice, and I flushed them. And that's just my experience, you know. You know, I don't get into that at all because it's not my experience. You know, I thought I was depressed. I knew I was depressed. I was very depressed. I tried something prescribed from the doctor, and after two, I knew that wasn't my problem. You know, I knew because it made me even more depressed. You know, I knew, you guys, that as it tells us, it was doing this, and I knew that my solution was the higher power. I knew that 10, 11, and 12 are big girl steps. You know, it means that I don't go through my day and motherfuck people and let that build up for 2 weeks. It means I am accountable. You know, thereby the grace of God go I. And so I had to look at my behavior and myself every single day. And I had to continuously seek. And I wish I could tell you exactly, you know, all of that. If anyone, you know, if any women are curious or whatever, I'd be more than happy to share that. But that's, I could not transmit something I hadn't got. And I'm so grateful that I didn't have an ego because I was willing to show up in the rooms and say, you know what, I don't know what I'm doing wrong. Something's not working, you know. And it was just, I had to continuously show up for that process, you know. And 10, 11, and 12, you know, for me has been significant. Because I know to my innermost self that I cannot put alcohol or drugs in my system and have a normal reaction. I even know today, you know, the truth is, if I had a choice, I wouldn't want it. You know, I would not want to give up the clarity that I have. You know, if I make a bad choice or a good choice, at least I know I have a clear choice, you know, and that's, I think that's what I struggled with even when I was little, you know, is I didn't feel like I had a choice. So when people were really rebelling, you know, or I was rebelling, it's because I didn't have a choice. So there's a tremendous freedom in choice. And that's what the 12 steps has done for me, written 1 through 12, has given me a choice. You know, every day I walk in, I can choose to do things. I can choose to take the suggestion of my sponsor, or I can do it my own way. And I did a lot of things my own way. And you know what? She never gave up on me. You know, gracious, beautiful women, beautiful men and women. So I want you to just, you know, humbly be proud that you're members of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I am so grateful and thankful that I got to be here and share my experience, strength, and hope. And I hope that there's one thing that I said that can maybe, you know, kind of impact your life a little bit. And I tell you what, I'm very grateful for this one. Thank you.